After the Taliban took power in Afghanistan, the National Stadium in the capital, Kabul, became notorious as a scene of public punishment, including executions. These days, the stadium is once again used for celebrations, parades, and sports, including women's soccer, unthinkable just a few years ago. An Afghan expatriate named Awista Ayub played a part in that. In 2004, she arranged for 8 Afghan girls to come to the United States to train as a team, to play the game they loved, and to just be kids. Awista Ayub also wrote a book about the Afghan youth sports exchange she founded. It's called However Tall the Mountain, A Dream, 8 Girls, and a Journey Home, and joins us today from the studios of Audio Post in Philadelphia. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, great. Thanks for having me.
And this was a bit of stepping off the cliff. You are of Afghan extraction. You left the country you were born in at the age of 2, grew up in this country. But after the fall of the Taliban, you wanted to do something.
Exactly. I was actually working as a research chemist at the time and just finished my undergraduate degree. So certainly on my end, it was very much a leap of faith and certainly I think has turned out pretty well 5 years later.
5 years later. And tell us about these girls. Where did you find them and why did you decide to bring them to this country?
Sure. Well, all the girls were from Kabul, and none of them played soccer at the time. So in 2004, when I was recruiting girls from the program, I was working with a local colleague on the ground in Kabul, and we actually couldn't find any girl soccer teams to recruit from. So we were looking at girls who had the potential of leadership to go back and certainly to teach other kids the sport as well, but also could handle a trip to the States. So by default, we ended up creating this soccer team, and I would come to understand, though, later that there were no girls' soccer teams, not because the sports infrastructure was lacking, which is what I attributed it to, but rather that soccer for women didn't exist before. And very much outside of America, the soccer culture is very male-dominated, which is very different within our confines of a country where women's soccer is so popular and very successful.
Awista Ayub, as you went to develop this, though, women's soccer has become much more popular in other parts of the world. And, of course, it's in the Olympic Games. That provides some legitimacy all its own.
Sure. And the reason I picked soccer, I actually am not a soccer player. I played tennis and ice hockey in college. But I picked soccer because the goal, as I said, was to have them come back and teach the sport. And all you need is a ball. And you're not limited by equipment such as basketball nets or anything else in that regard. So I felt that soccer being viewed as a universal sport would be very easy to take back for these girls.
But I don't mean to diminish this in any way. You were looking for agents of change, people to go back and change their culture.
Not necessarily to change it, but to add to it and to certainly to step up and become leaders off the field as well. Certainly, I think sports has proven to, as particularly for women, to play a very positive role in their lives on and off the playing field. And so I really felt that these girls needed this opportunity and certainly whether or not they continued with the sport, that hopefully they would take some of the lessons they learned from the sport off the field, which did happen for sure. And certainly they learned to turn to one another during times of difficulty, which I think might not have happened as easily before. And you see this new network of youth turning to one another now, a very strong network locally in Kabul that's formed as a result of sports.
Well, in the case of these 8 girls, give us some examples of how they have learned to depend upon each other.
Sure. I mean, even for me, it was very much a learning experience. I really didn't know what I was getting myself into at the time when the girls came. And I remember there was arguments that would start coming off of the field and girls were arguing off the field and on the field. And I couldn't really understand it until I really took the time to talk to them a little bit more. And certainly up to this point for all of these girls, their own community was one where violence was very common. And so if you had disputes, it wasn't a matter of always talking it out, much like we might do here in the States. But we've also been conditioned to address our issues in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, over the 6 weeks, I really work with them, with these girls, to instill in them, how do you openly resolve conflict? How do you do it in a way that's not aggressive as well? And over time, I would come to see that the girls did internalize this. And in the book as well, when you read it and you hear about their trips going back to Afghanistan, you see that they have that instilled in them much more strongly, that they learn to turn to one another, that violence and arguing is not the way that they solve problems. So certainly part of that, I think I can attribute to the program and to playing soccer and playing a sport.
Nevertheless, there are barriers to women's participation in sports like soccer in mm-hmm. Afghanistan. They encountered them before they came over here, and they have encountered them afterwards.
They did. Whenever I think by default, these girls, again, because they became pioneers and ambassadors and really the change makers for this sport, they're definitely pushing against a lot of the cultural and also gender barriers that have been put up over generations. And so I think for men to even see these girls playing, it was something new. And I think it was really easy for them right away to react negatively and to question it and to put them down. That environment has certainly changed since 2004, 2005, where girls playing sports and girls playing soccer is much more common. You know, the local news stations now in Afghanistan do show girls' soccer teams and show girls' basketball teams playing in games. So I think over time, as the culture is adapting as well, I think those barriers are starting to fall down, which certainly is wonderful for the culture in the country. But just to add to that, you know, anytime, even in the States, dating back to Title IX and the women's sports movements here, there was that same resistance initially as well. And so certainly I think as these girls and these women overcome them and they become more ingrained in the culture. So I think in 20 years, this will all be an afterthought. And I think women's soccer and women's sports in general for the country, I think, will be much more ingrained for the culture.
Well, tell us, I'd like to hear some of these more personal stories. I mean, there's a girl who is, I think, of particular interest to you. Well, they're all of particular interest to you, but there's a girl named Robina that you write about a great deal.
Yes, I do. She was definitely the quiet leader on that trip. And although she wasn't always as vocal to express her feelings immediately, she always was able to take in what was going on. And when she did speak up, the girls listened. So she was that type of leader. And certainly in going back to Afghanistan, you see that come out. I think she's definitely much more of a deep thinker and always really has always been a very sensitive individual as well from my work with her. So in her, I think that I always see what's great about Afghanistan as well is this ability to overcome obstacles and tragedy. And she's faced so much in her life, but yet she's able to do it with such confidence and pride and do so in a way that gains the respect from her peers as well.
Well, she's had difficulties within her own family, not to put too fine a point on it.
She has. I mean, she comes from more, I would say, you know, a larger family, but her father is not as involved. So she's never really also had a very prominent adult male figure in her life. And certainly, though, regardless of that, she's still a very confident and poised woman today. But yeah, her family life is, I mean, I think for all the girls and for many of the youth in Afghanistan, certainly if you take the time to talk to them, it's very common to hear of such tragedy and such hardships that they faced at a very young age. And for all these girls, they really did have to face with becoming adults at a very young age in their lives.
There's a disclaimer at the front of your book that you've changed some information that appears, including names, but other facets of the stories as well. Is that simply for the protection of these girls, or has it been changed to make it a better story?
No, it's been for the protection, and certainly all the girls volunteered and agreed to be a part of the book, but that was one thing that they all had asked for and that I agreed to, that I would change names and certain identifying characteristics just to protect them. You know, none of the stories are controversial by any means, but beyond that, it was just something that I felt was right to do as well.
Why do they still need protection if indeed local television still now shows women's soccer on TV?
I think it's hard to know, too, if they faced issues on a personal level. I know even when I write in the book that some of the family members question the right to girls to play soccer. So I think just from their own experience, they just wanted that extra level of protection just to make it a lot easier on them.
And this is not just a story about their journey and the difficulties they faced, obviously homesickness they felt after getting on an airplane for the very first time and going to someplace as different as the United States, whether they were in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. or later in Connecticut, or then the dislocation they felt when they returned home to Kabul and realized that they now saw a wider world and saw their home country differently.
They did. And I think whenever you have programs like this and exchanges, I think it just provides a different lens by which to look at your own country and your own culture. And so while I think it led to some issues initially of just really readjusting, you know, there's that always that reverse culture shock. I think it's really opened their minds to what's possible in their own country now. You know, why can't we have this? So I think it's actually broadened their understanding of the world. And certainly for many young girls today, I think, you know, sports, again, has provided such a great outlet to really take life lessons off the field and become leaders off the field and to fight for these rights.
Well, I was going to ask, have they had the impact that you hoped that they would have 5 years ago when you started this program? Have they turned into that cadre who would then bring other girls along, their younger sisters?
They have, for sure. I think within their own families and outside of their families. A few of the girls started their own soccer teams. So over the years, I provided equipment and some funding for them to get that going. You know, what's interesting with the sports culture, as I said, because women's soccer wasn't in existence before, you're looking at girls now who have coaches, but these girls are better trained and know the sport better than their own coaches, who are more there by default as adult figures. So you're seeing these girls now over time step up into that leadership role to become the coaches. And certainly, as I said, there's a strong peer network of girls who turn to one another. You know, I've heard stories beyond these eight girls when I was in Afghanistan of other players and other girls who were interested in playing soccer. And they turned to their peers to have them come to meet with their families to convince them that it was okay for them to play. So I think certainly as we're seeing time go by, you're seeing young girls who are really stepping up in these roles. And certainly I think that's great for the country. And they'll be the future leaders to take that initiative both on and off the field.
We're talking with Awista Ayoub. She's the author of However Tall the Mountain, a story about eight Afghan girls, a dream and a journey home. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. It is also a story of your journey from Afghanistan as a small child, growing up in this country, and then, well, it seems to me that you were trying to reestablish a connection to your own culture. Obviously, you grew up an Afghan-American, but that's not quite the same thing, is it?
It's not. I think it's hard sometimes to have this dual identity, especially as a first-generation immigrant growing up in the States. You're not Afghan enough or you're not American enough sometimes to fit in. And so I think for me, I've always wanted to go back to Afghanistan since I was a young girl. I'd heard of stories of the country from my parents. And really, the chance to go back didn't even come into reality until much later in my lifetime. And I'd given up hope on that dream for a while. So for me to go back and not want to be just a tourist in my home country, it was really, I want to go back and make a difference. And so sports for me played such a prominent role in my own life. I think being an immigrant, I did turn to sports quite often to find that place of sanctuary for me personally.
And a place of welcome, too. And it's interesting, when you go back to Afghanistan at the end of the book, you have some experiences which reveal to yourself just how, well, you're not Afghan enough. You're too American. You're in the market, for example, and one of the women says to you, you're not from here, are you?
Yeah, I mean, the culture's always different. And because I'm not living there, I was wearing my headscarf a little bit, maybe less conservatively than some of the local women. And so a woman did point that out to me. And, you know, when she told me that she could tell that I wasn't from the country, and or at least grew up in the country, she pointed that as to the reason why she could tell. So as a result, you know, certainly I wore it more conservatively after that. And even when I speak Pashto, my parents were very good about teaching us the language at home. I do have a slight accent. So even if I blended in physically, as soon as I spoke, it was very obvious right away. And it didn't cause me hardship per se, but certainly just made me aware of, you know, I still stand out as an outsider of sorts. So there was this adjustment that I did have to undertake in my first trip to Afghanistan, which did make it easier the second time around as well, though.
Now let's get a caller on the line. Now Mike is calling from Salem, Oregon.
Good afternoon. I think this is a fascinating subject. I have to commend the lady for taking this initiative up. As you know, I'm probably not local to America. I've seen
a slight change in the accent, yes.
Yes, a slight change in the accent. I've heard of soccer stopping wars before. There was an experience in the First World War where the British troops and the German troops got together and they were in fact shelled by their own size to break it up. I'm interested about pushing barriers. Has any consideration been given to including the male and female soccer teams together to kind of break down this issue of female oppression in the country? Is that something even being considered? Is it even on the drawing board?
Awista Ayub?
Sure. Mike, thanks for your question. In terms of having the men and women play together, it's not really an option yet today. Part of that is because the culture, to some degree, is still very conservative locally. And when the girls play, there are very few, if not actually no men, who are around the field, so that it provides them this sense of security and this safe space where they can play. And although they do dress modestly, it's just important to not have men around for that freedom. And also the parents are very insistent upon men not being on the playing field as well. So because of that, I think it would be difficult to bring them together. But maybe that's something certainly down the road that's possible. I mean, even if we look at our own system here, we do separate men and women in terms of the playing field. You know, we don't have them compete at the same level. But they do more so if they do, it's more in a casual setting. But I think that's maybe something certainly down the road that's possible.
Mike, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. And Awista Ayub, thank you so much for your time today.
Great. Thanks for having me again.
Awista Ayub is the founder of the Afghan Youth Sports Exchange and the author now of However Tall the Mountain, and joined us today from Audio Post Philadelphia Studios. Tomorrow, King James, NBR NBA star LeBron James joins us, plus one of the kings of Latin comedy, stand-up Joey Medina. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.